We're doing Ein Yaakov, if Kapi is here, if anyone wants to follow inside. We're up to page Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, which is Daf Pei Ches in the Gemara. Darash Rabbi Simai. Rabbi Simai taught, B'sha'ah shekdimu Yisrael na'aseh l'nishma, when the Jewish people said, na'aseh, we will perform. Before they said, Nishma, we will listen, we will adhere. Bau 600,000 angels came. I don't know what Malachei Asharet means. Type of angel. Sharet, what?
Very high-level angel.
Okay, so he knows. Good. Shakach, I don't know. Lechol echad v'echad miYisrael. So 600,000 came to every Jew. Kashru lo shnei ketarim, and they tied onto them two crowns. Echad keneged naaseh, one corresponding to naaseh, and echad keneged nishma, and one corresponding to the word that they said, Nishma. We will adhere, we will listen, we will obey. Bekevan shechateu Yisrael, and when the Jewish people transgressed, Yaredu 120 ribo malachei chabana, 120,000, so I don't understand the number exactly. First it was 600,000 corresponding to the men. Now it's 120,000 angels who inflict harm, uparekum, and they removed those crowns. Shenemar, the verse says, "Vayitnatzelu bnei Yisrael et edyam me'achorev." The Jewish people removed the ornament, the jewel, which they received at Mount Sinai. Achorev is Mount Sinai. So,
what happened that caused the angels to come down?
Seems after they transgressed with the Ega. Yeah?
So maybe 120 can get this to message.
It was again. It was 60,000 angels. No, it was 600,000. So it should be. So it's 100. It's 1,200,000, I'm sorry. Not 120,000, it's Meve Esrim Ribo. 1,200,000 angels of harm came to remove the crowns, meaning the angels that brought them, each angel carried two crowns. The angel that removed them, each angel could only remove one crown. So you had double the amount of angels to remove the crown. I misread the number. It's 1,200,000, not 120,000. It's Meve Esrim Ribo. 1,200,000 crowns, and each one removed these crowns. So Am Yisrael had these crowns removed, and these crowns were called their ornament, the ornament the Jewish people had from Sinai. So what are these crowns? So we're not exactly sure what these crowns represent. One opinion says that the crowns represented kehuna and malchut. They were the crowns of being atem tiyulim mamlechet kohanim, that they were supposed to be a nation where everyone was king. There was no hierarchy, and everyone was kohanim. And they lost that. Now they no longer could all be the leaders and the kohanim. Now, another interpretation says these two crowns represent freedom from two types of affliction. Freedom from death, that says that at Sinai, Am Yisrael was removed from what had happened at in the Garden of Eden. That when, you guys want the long version or the short version?
Long
version. Okay.
That's
So the Gemara says that when the serpent came to Chava, so it says he threw within her his venom. And that venom is what would ultimately cause death to come to the world. And that venom is what ultimately caused all forms of defilement to come to the world. But the wording in the Gemara is, Hetil bazu amato. He threw within her his filth. What are we talking about? What exactly happened? There's the Gemara doesn't explain. The Medrash in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer says that when it speaks about the forbidden fruit, it's talking about intimacy. That man is described as a tree. And the forbidden fruit was the act of intimacy that was supposed to wait. They weren't supposed to be involved in that until Friday night. And what the serpent revealed to her was the act of intimacy. And according to the Medrash, Cain was conceived from the snake. Possibly also from Adam, but from the snake. So this snake is not an ordinary snake. This is a snake that speaks. And all of humanity was tainted. Chava was tainted. Chazal tell us that the act of intimacy affects the person. It's not just a physical act. You eat together. It's an act that actually two people become one. That's Vayula Basar Echad. So Chazal say that all of Chava's offsprings were tainted because of what she had done with the snake and for all future generations until we stood at Sinai. When we stood at Sinai and Hashem spoke to the people as one, so then the Gemara says, Pasaka Zuamatan. Their stench stopped. In other words, whatever the snake had been able to affect, Chava, was now ended. And that's when they stood and accepted the Torah at Sinai. So then it ended. Benny, I'll get to you in a minute. And then it says, so that's a fulfillment of the blessing. Ani amarti Elokim atem. Hashem says, I want you to be godlike. I want you to not die. And at Sinai, we had overcome what had happened in the Garden of Eden. We had come back full circle to where we should have been. And then, when they sinned with the golden calf, so then they lost that. So according to this Medrash, the two crowns represent, one crown represents freedom from death, from the angel of death. That's the freedom that the crown represents. And the other crown represents freedom from exile. Adam HaRishon was also exiled, right? Vaygaresh et Adam, Hashem chased him out of the Garden of Eden. And so this idea that the Jewish people would be exiled from the land of Israel or would undergo an exile, that's also a form of death. That's what the two crowns represent, that freedom. In the future, we're supposed to come back to that. That we come to the land of Israel and there's no longer a threat of exile. And that we reach a point where there's no longer a threat of death. So that's another interpretation as to what these two crowns represent. Again, you guys want the long version or the short version?
Long version.
Long version. Okay, so here we have to understand what's the connection between what happened with the serpent in the Garden of Eden and the golden calf. So on a basic level, man has a challenge. We live in the world and there are all kinds of temptations. Every minute, we would want to do all kinds of things. It could be what we look at, what we think about, what we eat, what we drink, how long we sleep. There could be a million things that are tempting man. And man has a challenge. It's an ongoing challenge. Where do I put the Ribono Shel Olam? In all of my decisions, it's a constant question we have to decide on. It's the question of, do I have kavanah when I make a blessing or when I daven? It's the question of, do I take the last gureka because someone else might be coming who didn't have dinner yet? So it's a question of what's my first priority in what I do? Is the Ribono Shel Olam number one in my life? Well, part of the question is the Ribono Shel Olam number one is, am I willing to make him number one? How do I view the Ribono Shel Olam or my responsibilities to him? Adam and Chava had one commandment. And suddenly that became very, very tempting. That's the psychology of man. When we're told you can have everything but one thing, so then that one thing becomes very enticing. It seems like that's what you really want. I don't know, by the way, how diabetics manage. Meaning, because I would imagine that if you see the rest of the world enjoying something and you can't have it, I would imagine it becomes a huge temptation. I don't know. Because the flip side of it is that on Yom Kippur, I'm not walking around salivating as I feed my kids. I know I can't eat. I feed my kids, and I'm fine. It's not hard for me. If they would sit there and eat a delicious pizza, I don't think it would affect me on a fast day, because I know I'm not eating it. It's not, you know, it's off limits to me. So it could be that it's the same. That's the way a diabetic feels. But the nature of man is that very often, if there's one thing that I can't have right now, that's what I want right now. So there are two components to what Adam and Chava did. The first component is the second component is they did what they wanted, as opposed to the commandment of Hashem. But the first component was the Lashon Hara, that the serpent came and convinced them that the only reason Hashem gave you this commandment was to hurt you. You would be much better off without it. They were willing to accept the Lashon Hara, that Hashem was zealous, that Hashem was keeping something for himself, and that the reason he forbade it from you is because he wants to keep the good life for himself. When they bought into that, so that's what led to step two, they were willing to transgress. So we have two components as to what happens in the Garden of Eden, and those two components give us insight into ourselves. Our constant challenge: can I look at the Torah as a positive thing in my life? Well, if the Torah is a positive thing in my life, should I cheat on my taxes? Am I going to gain anything by doing things against the Torah? So there's a constant temptation to tell ourselves, sure, I'm going to gain. You kidding? I say I'm going to gain. Right. But is that real? Chava also saw the fruit as lush and delicious and tempting. So there are two challenges here. Is it for my benefit that I have these commandments? And am I going to listen to them? When we look at the Chet HaEgel, the Chet HaEgel has two components. The Chet HaEgel has the component that, do I want to listen to what Hashem said? I think it's a great idea. Let's set up a calf, the way we had in Egypt. So it's very tempting. That's what they were accustomed to. But there's another component, and that's the component where the Chet HaEgel connects with the Chet HaMeraglim. Now, what were the spies doing? They were convincing the people, Hashem doesn't have your best interest at heart. Hashem gave you this mitzvah, but really it's not good for you. Things are not going to go well for you if we go into the land of Israel. And Chazal say it was the two of them that really brought us down. It's not so clear that right away with the Chet HaEgel everything got destroyed. You see, we were still headed into the land of Israel. It's the Chet HaMeraglim component of the Chet HaEgel that really brought us down, and that's the Lashon Hara component that corresponds to what happened with the serpent in the Garden of Eden. And that's the idea that after these two were done, we were back where we started with. Meaning initially we had heard the Ten Commandments at Sinai, and we were done. No more dying. No more exile. Going to the land of Israel and bring back the world to where it should be. Suddenly we brought the world down with these two transgressions and these two temptations. I'll be with you in 1 second, but Benny was first. Yeah.
This is a question from a little while back, but you said man is the tree, and what were the other trees?
It doesn't say the tree of life was within the trees. It says the tree of life, it says the tree was within the garden. And the garden in the Song of Songs is also a description of intimacy with the woman. But there definitely is a description of trees. That's true. But it says the Eitz is Bitoch HaGan. Doesn't say B'toch HaYitzim. And that again refers to the overt pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Gan Na'ul Achoti Chala, that the beloved is described as a locked garden. The lock being the hymen, saying the virginity, which is again goes back to the Garden of Eden, where there's a blessing which most people don't make. But it is recorded in Baal Halachos Gedolos and the Tur that after a person is intimate for the first time with his wife who's a virgin, afterwards they pour a cup of two cups of wine or grape juice, and they make a blessing over the fact that Hashem created this concept that a person can know that his wife was a virgin until they got married. Okay, it's not quoted in the Gemara, but it does go back to Gan Eden. It says, Ashitzage goes, and again, it's referred to, the woman is referred to as a tree of some type of nut, a goz, whatever that is. So it's a euphemism to describe it as the peel of a tree. But that's the idea. Yeah. No more questions? Okay. We move forward. But maybe we'll pause here and do some halacha. Hanukkah's coming up. We should start doing the laws of Hanukkah.
Sure.
And also the story of Hanukkah, yeah? Okay, yes.
One more question. You said after the Ten Commandments, if we wouldn't have done the Meraglim, wouldn't have happened.
Sorry.
Everything, like, then Mashiach would come. That's what you said.
I don't know if Mashiach would come. We were supposed to enter the land of Israel and bring the world to a better place. It seems that Yoshua was supposed to be the Mashiach, the descendant of Rachel. That was Yoshua ben Nun's job. In an ideal world, yeah.
And just to piggyback on that, in the end of death, that certainly sounds beyond Messianic. I mean, the other class, you sort of get a reason for living and connecting with God. All of a sudden, that's all done. And, you know, that's a class in itself. I mean, do we want that? And if we want that, certainly not in the state we're in now. And, you know.
So the Gemara says that, I just want to silence this, the Gemara says it would have been, we wouldn't have had more children. If people wouldn't die, you also wouldn't have more children. It's not a different world. Right. Right. Yeah, it's a different world.
But my question is that an ideal thing?
Why not? Yeah.
What point is that?
But there is. So that's a series.
Yeah. You know.
That's. Okay.